Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
This episode is brought to you by Cologuard. Do you know what's really scary? Not screening for colon cancer when you turn 45. The Cologuard test is non-invasive, requires no special prep or time off work, and ships right to your door. In just 3 simple steps, Cologuard takes the scare out of colon cancer screening. If you're 45 or older and at average risk, ask your healthcare provider about the Cologuard test. Cologuard is available by prescription only. Learn more or request a prescription today at Cologuard.com/screen.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Hope you had a good weekend. We are back in action now. And of course, woke up to what happened at LaGuardia Airport, at that plane smashed into some type of ambulance or emergency truck, where both pilots died. 45 go to the hospital, 31 get let go, but some people are really seriously hurt. That's who we woke up today, but we have a lot more to discuss this hour. Lawrence Jones is here in studio, and then Chairman Jim Jordan, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, also on Oversight Committee, he's going to be joining us too. So we had a big hour coming your way, and so let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We would be naive if, looking at what's happening around the world, we would not do that. But we truly hope that it doesn't occur. We don't see why it would have to occur.
Yep, Cubs, Cuba, open up is on the clock. It begin to crumble, and now it's time for the U.S. to get a strategy for a soft landing and to have a major impact in its rebuild. The problem is they still want to fight.
Number two.
These Democrats are so crazy. I mean, if you're in an airport and you see these long lines, you better know. I think most of them do know. It's Democrats and Chuck Schumer that are causing the long lines at airports.
Senator Jim Banks weighing in. Intolerable. Denying TSA pay has crippled air travel. 400 plus agents have flat out resigned. Only one party is to blame, Democrats. This has to be solved today. We're about to get a new leader in the DHS. Use that as an off ramp.
Number one.
If you want proof that Iran endangers the entire world, the last 48 hours have given it. They have now the capacity to reach deep into Europe. They are putting everyone in their sights.
Yup, week 4 of the war with Iran, and stakes have never been higher as the desperate regime rockets go 2,000 plus miles at a UK airbase with our stuff on it. It's revealing another lie that the regime was telling the world that many people weren't willing to believe, not us, not Israel. So, Lawrence, they're pointing now at, it was an intermediate range missiles, and it's true they said they didn't have it, but they're not accurate.
No one's buying it.
Yeah.
No one's buying it. I think, okay, so there's two stories with this. It is obvious, the obvious one, that the Iranian people are suffering under a regime that completely lies every single week. There's something that they have to backtrack that they've said weeks before. Okay, so that's the other part. The second part, Brian, I think is almost a larger point. The UK wouldn't let us refuel at Diego Garcia. They didn't realize that it was an imminent threat. And now they tried to fire at that same military base. That just shows you that the president is right on target and they're behind.
So there's two things the president's got to do. He's got to find a way to open up that strait and get the uranium. I'm not sure if he has to go get it, but they have
the types of units in place that would be able to get it. But while you're excavating from that area, pulling out the kilograms of uranium, you got to protect it. You got to come in with heavy machinery and go get it. And for in order for people to say, well, this expedition was certainly worth it, there's a fear that people have that the president's not going to finish the job because the Iranians continuing to target Israel as well as our Gulf neighbors.
Well, let me tell you why the fear would happen. It's our fault. I'm watching the coverage every single day and some of the analysis, Brian, and it's all over the oil and not the military operation itself. That is what the Iranians have said that they wanted to use as their leverage point against the president. And we keep letting them do it. I mean, there's a whole debate right now about opening it up. Honestly, if I'm thinking practically, that should not be a consideration in the military objective right now.
Yeah, it could be part of it. It could be to escort the troops using the military, the USS Tripoli and others, in order to do that while targeting the fast boats. Remember, we were able to shoot missiles out of the sky with our F-16s and F-35s. Can we do that again? The Warthog, maybe aiming at the Warthog units, maybe aiming at the fast boats or the Mosquito boats that the Iranians have, while keeping fighter jets in the air to knock out one-way drones. Here's what Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg said he took away and what Europe should be taking away from this new missile strikes at Diego Garcia, Cut 12.
Now, the fact of the matter is the president was right. There was a threat. There was a missile threat. When you look at the range of those missiles, the missile arc, you're talking it could reach all of Europe. It can reach to England. It can reach to France. It can reach to Italy.
And he went on to say this, Cut 13. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the only cut from Keith Kellogg. So he's someone who also noted, too, that they could hit Moscow. Now, I'm not saying that Iran would ever hit Moscow, but that's all in the sphere of influence and attack. If they wanted, they could start hitting Ukraine.
I mean, they could. I don't see them hitting Russia because Russia is their backer. Just like I don't see them hitting China as well because they're a backer. I think what has become clear and what I would like to see is the Gulf states be a part of the offensive measure. Now that the Europeans understand that they're a potential target as well, that they'll be a part of this as well. Why are we having to negotiate with people that are supposed to be our allies, and that Iran has pretty much made it very clear that you're an enemy as well? And that seems to be a common theme right now, Brian.
So evidently
that we have to convince them.
Yeah, but evidently there's no direct talks between the U.S. and Iran. However, they are thinking about Iran's working through Egypt, Qatar, and the U.K. have all had passed messages between the two in order to get in touch with us. Some of the negotiating points that we have: no missile program for 5 years, zero uranium enrichment, decommissioning Natanz, we already bombed that, strict of outside observation protocols, arms control treaties with regional countries that include a missile gap of 1,000 miles, no financing for proxies. I can't see them agreeing to more than one of these. This is not going to happen. You got to bring this regime down.
Brian, even if they did agree to it, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be that way.
No.
The audience knows me. I'm no Lindsey Graham, but I do understand what a threat is. And they've made it very clear that they lie. They lie constantly. And the religious documents, because they're radical Islamists, you're an infidel. And if you don't take them seriously now and eliminate it now, then they're going to come back stronger. And I think we just got to take advantage, block out all the noise for the next 2 to 3 weeks and just finish them.
Right. Here's Tom Tillis, who's finished shortly, said about this is going after Iran. He says he's for the action, but wants to make sure we finish the job. Cut 15.
We can't all of a sudden go out there and intervene the way we have and then suddenly become an isolationist in the back end of it. You can't have it both ways. We've decided that we're going to project power and try and produce good outcomes in the Middle East. You can't all of a sudden walk away after you've kind of created the event and expect other people to pick it up and leave a good taste in their mouth. I mean, a part of this is, you know, the health and hygiene of our partnerships in the region going forward. And if we exit and say, now it's your turn to clean it up, I don't think that will end well.
Because the president did post at one point, you guys straighten out the Strait of Hormuz. We're just doing the military thing.
Well, I don't think it's our job to rebuild, but I do think that it would be inconsistent with the president's message over not only in the Middle East, but also in Venezuela of economic prosperity. That doesn't mean that we're going to take the lead, but it is means that we'll invite businesses as long as we have a partnership with them. I do disagree with the senator later on in that interview that he did. He said that the administration pretty much hasn't laid out their objectives. I'm tired of hearing that. Mm-hmm. I understand the objectives very clearly. Decimate their Navy, decimate their missile program, and make sure that they never have a nuclear weapon. Sorry, yeah. That's what we're doing.
I know.
So right. Stop saying that they're not. You know, every morning we get a progress report, essentially, showing us the latest terror targets that they've taken out. So I just disagree with that.
So Scott Bessent was in the line of fire on Meet the Press, where people were misinterpreting actually what he's doing. He also pointed out, too, that there are defections on the Iranian side. He said that in the Oval Office. Cut one.
As President Trump always does, he's leaving all options on the table. We had a very successful bombing campaign against the military installations at Karg Island, the nexus for all the Iranian oil supply. You know, what could happen with Karg Island? We'll see. And again, just to be clear, the command and control system of the Iranian regime is in chaos. This is Hitler's bunker. Hitler's dead. Himmler is dead. Goring is dead. Most of what you're seeing are lone wolf activities. The mid-range ICBM that was shot off, these two missiles yesterday, that's out of desperation, Kristen.
I didn't know that about it, but you know what's also concerning? That some of those rockets got through in Israel to their nuclear sites where they're the most fortified. So what went wrong with the missile defense there?
Well, they're overwhelming some of the missile defenses there, and that's also part of the problem, and that's why you got to make sure that the Hezbollah doesn't get involved as well, because we saw that during the 12-day war as well, that they were overwhelmed. They would save these rockets to the very end, and then they were overwhelmed the system. I mean, the defense system aren't bulletproof to begin with. There's three layers of it, and they found ways in. Brian, it's not something that we've talked about a lot, but part of the problem that Israel has and we have as well is that we're running out of munitions. And so we got to get the production of that done pretty soon.
Interceptors especially.
Interceptors as well.
Right. And we got to find a way to do this affordably and you take out a one-way drone with a one-way drone.
Right.
That's one thing to do. I want to talk about Cuba before we go. Nora Gomez Torres was on with me from the Miami Herald, who, as a respect to the administration of our Cuban coverage, listen to what she says is happening behind the scenes. Cut 18.
Well, we did manage to confirm that top Rubio's advisor met with Raul Castro's grandson. We don't know if there was a face-to-face meeting with the secretary or not, but either way, they are talking to Raul Castro's grandson. He is his closest aide. He is his bodyguard. And like a young Castro that could be like more amenable to capitalism, pretty much. He's known for liking a luxury lifestyle. Mm. So the administration is kind of looking for, you know, a Delcy Rodriguez type of figure that could, you know,
who's running Venezuela,
open up the country, the economy, exactly, yeah. And work with the United States. But my sources tell me that they don't think he's going to be that person.
A lot of people just don't want a Castro to run the country. We don't care who he is.
I totally understand it as well. I don't want Delcy Rodriguez running Venezuela as well. But
she did fire the defense minister, which we asked her to
do. She did. She's doing whatever the president tells her to do right now. But eventually, you do have to open it up so the people can decide on their next leader. I think what the president noticed, and Marco Rubio is doing, no one's better on Latin American politics, is he realizes the quote, money is freedom. You get the people economic prosperity first. You counsel the socialists, kick them out first. And a lot of the brutality is a part of that as well. So then after that, you get everything stable economically.
Yeah.
You open it up for elections as well.
Right.
And I think that's what the president is doing.
But you realize since we're pushing back on the communism, socialism thing. So Bolivia's flipped already. And then you have Venezuela, we just told you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Argentina kicked out China. And Chile just elected a conservative government. We know El Salvador, they have got rid of all all their gangs, yeah, and they've revitalized their country. So you have these conservatives, center-right conservatives winning.
Right.
So this is really benefiting us and the Cuban influence, which would they mentor Chavez. They put the Bolivia guy in power. So they come in with their resources, and they got this great cadre of doctors. And Castro was spreading throughout the, like an infection, a cancer, and now it's just all falling apart.
Why should Americans care about this? It's not just the drugs, but also if you want to fix the immigration issue in this country, you got to fix what is causing these people to flee. And that's the oppression that's happening in Latin America. The president is solving this, and we're making money off of it, too.
Cut 17 is the deputy foreign minister, Carlos Fernandez de Castro, on Meet the Press. Cut 17.
Our military is always prepared, and in fact, it is preparing these days for the possibility of military aggression. We would be naive if, looking at what's happening around the world, we would not do that. But we truly hope that it doesn't occur. We don't see why it would have to occur, and we find no justification whatsoever. Why would the government of the United States force its country to take military action against a neighboring country like Cuba?
So I watched this interview live. I think it was telling. I mean, obviously, you're not going to have a country that says that they're not prepared for military action. I think that's a weak country, so you can't display that. But they were crying uncle as well, though, Brian. They're saying that they would want a diplomatic solution. The problem is that you can't have Castro-like policies running the country and still have peace and prosperity. And I think the president is going to reject that. The question is, do we get to the same place as Maduro? The president gives him an exit ramp. He rejects that. And then, of course, the special forces come in. We don't know.
Yeah, so we're going to see what's going to happen, but I think that it was fascinating. The Miami Herald reporter said, for the most part, the military, it's its own entity.
Right.
They own 40% of the assets of their country. They own all the gas stations, the hotels.
Yep.
So the tourism, wow. So they're in. Can you imagine having a military that invests on their own, builds things as a landlord, a gas station? So they might be tough, you know, there'll be some resistance there because they got nowhere to go.
No.
They're living, the people in Iran, they are holding on to power. It's because they live a luxury lifestyle.
Right,
not only that, they're death cult. But same thing with Cuba. You know, we got it good. You think communism's bad? Not for the people that run it. It's pretty great
100%.
For us. 100%.
I mean, it's the same in Venezuela as well. And by the way, it's like, it can't be lost on us that the people that were guarding Maduro were Cubans. They weren't the Venezuelan people.
He couldn't trust
his people. So, again, all of this is crumbling. And honestly, I think, to the president's point, Cuba really may crumble on its own. We may be there to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, right. And the way it lands, it could be. We just don't want to be the ones fixing the country.
No.
We want their revenue to fix the country.
No, I think the president does it just like he does in the Middle East. Invite the business community to come there, set up those relationships. We make a little money off of it.
All right, Lawrence Jones, where are you going to be today?
I'm going to go jiu-jitsu after this.
You are now?
Yeah.
You're going to wear goggles?
No goggles. I'm back at it.
Okay. I'm not sure I can support this.
I know. Brian, I made a unilateral decision. It was time to go back.
Right. Can you wear the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar goggles?
I guess I could.
The bubble goggles. Yeah.
I guess I could.
Let's do
that. But it just makes me not want them to come toward my face. And I've been successful. No, everybody's respectful. They realize that I just had eye surgery and all that.
Going into a full contact martial arts class is really, it's always good to know that nothing could ever go wrong.
That's correct.
Nothing could ever go wrong. It's not like, you know, I was walking in the street and I got hit by a random elbow. No, I went to class and asked people to wrestle with
me. How am I going to explain that to the boss?
You can't.
Right,
you can't.
Exactly. They're going to use this against me.
I'm going to make sure you don't go.
Right.
Thanks, Lawrence.
See you.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Join Fox in supporting our troops. From daily needs to global emergencies, help us be there for those who serve. Visit go.fox/Red Cross to donate to service to the armed forces today. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The Washington Post says there's real progress made on negotiations with Republicans and Democrats about funding TSA, cybersecurity, as well as the Coast Guard. And, you know, ICE is fully funded. But the president really got in the face of all these Democrats by saying, okay, All these massive slowdowns at airports, flights being canceled, people missing their flights. You see New Orleans probably the worst, Atlanta second. And he says, I have an idea to release the pressure. How about I put ICE agents down there? So they're now scattered out, helping out in airports, helping to reduce those lines any way they can. How about that for an in-your-face? It's a totally unnecessary delay, a tactic, and I feel bad for the 400 people that had to quit to do other jobs, and even more for the people that have to miss their vacation, miss their work, and miss not getting where they have to go because of Democrats trying to be tough.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I would say that, you know, one of the leverage points that Iran has is trying to drive up the price of oil. It's leverage. Democrats want to see long lines at airports as leverage. President Trump's trying to take that leverage away and not make the American people suffer. So TSA agents are law enforcement. They know how to pat people down. They know how to run the X-ray machines because they are, again, under Homeland Security with TSA. So if we can bring in other assets and tools to assist TSA to get rid of these lines, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the president's looking around every corner to make sure the American people don't suffer during the shutdown.
There you go. And that is, of course, the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, talking about what we're seeing now, and those long lines everywhere, let alone the accident at LaGuardia that stops that airport until 2 p.m. Eastern time. Chairman Jim Jordan has seen a lot of shutdowns before, nothing quite like this. He's chairman of House Judiciary Committee, also Oversight Committee. Chairman, do you like this move by the president to put ICE agents in there? It's a very much an in-your-face to Democrats who wanted to fund ICE.
Yeah, the president makes decisions that are in the best interest of the country. If the Democrats are going to shut down the government, he's going to make a decision that will help Americans who were flying, who were at these long lines at our airports. So, yeah, I like this decision. What I'd like more is that the Democrats would open up the government. Remember, they shut it down for 43 days last fall, set a record. Now they're toying with that when it comes to the Department of Homeland Security, and they're doing it at a time when we've had four terrorist attacks in the last 3 weeks. We're in the middle of a military operation in Iran, not to mention the long lines that are occurring at airports. So I think this makes sense, and it's consistent with how the president makes decisions.
Well, a couple of things. I did see in the Washington Post, some other places, that progress is being made. If that progress is being made, I imagine Jim Jordan would know about it. Have you heard that?
Well, I'm reading the morning news as well this morning. It sounds like there's some talk, but no agreement yet. And of course, the Democrats are all fired about this 10-bullet-point plan they put out, you know, 4 weeks ago at the beginning of this this shutdown. And some of those things on there just don't make sense. So, but what really doesn't make sense, Brian, is the one issue they never want to talk about is when it comes to ICE is this sanctuary city, sanctuary jurisdiction policy, where in 18 cities, 11 states, 3 counties, District of Columbia are sanctuary jurisdictions. This means one thing. Local political leaders tell local law enforcement not to work with federal law enforcement when it comes to enforcing federal law. It's really one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. But that's what we really – we passed a bill out of our committee, Judiciary Committee, 2 weeks ago to address this. Excuse me. I'm hoping that that's something that we're going to get passed on the House floor. That's where we need to focus if we really want to fix things out there, and then, of course, get the Democrats open up the government.
You have so much on your plate. I'm not even sure you found out or knew about the 18-year-old Loyola University student, Sheridan Gorman, who was shot and killed on Thursday morning at 1 in the morning, just walking through a park with friends. She's an innocent teen. They tried to be mugged by Jose Medina. He is from Venezuela, here illegally, already been arrested twice, and then kills her. And you're going to tell me the sanctuary city has nothing to do with that? It's a magnet for these criminals.
Well, not only a magnet, that individual may have been apprehended, may have had a detainer filed. We know this happened 17,864 times in 2025. So 17,864 times, there's an illegal migrant in the country. He gets arrested and charged with some other crime while he's in the jail or the detention center. A detainer notice is sent to that jail or detention center, and it says, hey, if you're going to let this guy out, give us ICE, give federal government, give ICE a heads up. And 17,000 times, over 17,000 times, they refuse to honor the detainer. And many times they release that individual to the streets and they go out and commit another crime. That may, in fact, have been what is happening here. We're looking at that. Was this guy in on a detainer? Was there in jail? Was there a detainer notice sent? And was he released in spite of all that? Which is how ridiculous, how stupid this sanctuary jurisdiction policy is.
So think about this family. They know it's senseless.
Yeah.
They put out a statement saying this is senseless. This is not political. There's right and there's wrong. And here's another example. But are you going to, you know, we hear nonstop about ICE and what happened in Minneapolis and why and all this, how terrible they are. If you want to have credibility as a Democrat, come out and say, yeah, I think ICE is being overzealous. I'm glad to see Mark Wayne Mullen take over. But on the other point, this is why we need ICE. And if they put a statement like that, I'm like, okay. You know, different ideologies, but same focus, how to do it. But you don't hear a word about this.
No, I know. I say this all the time. It seems like every policy that the left now adopts makes no sense. And you can, I mean, the defunding the police makes no sense. That's crazy. Open borders, which we had under Biden, is crazy. The sanctuary jurisdiction policy is crazy. This no cash bail, crazy. On and on it goes when it comes to just enforcement of the law. The positions they take make absolutely no sense. And I think that's going to be a big element, Brian, in this in the upcoming midterm elections. I think it's they're crazy, we're not. Their policies make no sense. It's crazy versus common sense, as the president likes to say. And I think that is accurate. And I think it'll be a central issue in the fall's election.
So I want you to hear Governor Pritzker, who got his iPhone out and had it surrounded by security, pretended like he was alone, the very spot where this 18-year-old was gunned down. This is what he was saying last year to show how safe Chicago is. Cut 25.
Well, here I am on the path on the lakefront at 6 a.m. on Monday. And we got a lot of people running, having a great time. It doesn't feel like a hellhole here. In fact, everybody's having a great time and enjoying themselves. So I don't know who in Washington thinks that Chicago is some sort of hellhole, but you may need to look inward.
Really? Look inward? Really?
Wow. Wow. That's
same place.
Of course, he's there at the same place with, I'm sure, some type of security detail, which is different than a student who's, you know, walking the street there. I mean, that's just the left. That's how they are. They do their little clip and think it's going to somehow be get at President Trump. Everything they're focused on is going after President Trump. But one thing I know is President Trump has secured the border. One thing I know is crime is down because of that focus on securing the border. I know in the big beautiful bill we allocated resources so we could keep our border secure, and it would help if we could also deal with the sanctuary jurisdiction policy. So that's why we passed 2 weeks ago in our committee the Sanctuary Jurisdiction Shutdown Act of 2026, which would stop this kind of nonsense from happening around the country. Remember, those 18 cities, 11 states, 3 counties, and District of Columbia, they represent, Brian, almost a third of the country. Because they're big blue cities and big blue states. So almost it's 31.5% of the nation, the population of our great nation, lives in a jurisdiction where they do not honor that detainer request, where the political leaders tell law enforcement, don't work with federal law enforcement. That is so stupid, and it results in innocent Americans being harmed when otherwise that individual would be apprehended and detained by ICE.
Chairman Jim Jordan with us. So Chairman, just to point out before we move on, I want to talk about Iran a little bit too, and that is that one of the reasons why Barack Obama's deportation numbers were high is because Tom Homan said he was given access to the prisons to get these guys that are here illegally who are already locked up and ship them out. That's why they got so high. When President Trump becomes president and says, I want to target sanctuary cities and build a wall, then Democrats say, we can't let him do that and we can't give him access to our prisons. Tom Homan's the same guy they gave an award to. Now he's just trying to do what he was doing under Barack Obama. if you need any other example where it's pure politics, there's no better one than this.
No, totally about politics. I mean, the idea that you would release we've actually seen the forms from these local jurisdictions where they will stamp on the form released to the streets. When ICE was on the way, all they had to do was wait. I mean, the ICE says, just give us a call. And instead they go, no, we're going to release them to the streets. They stamp it on the form and the individual on the streets, which again requires that one agent can pick them up at the jail. It takes several agents, maybe dozens of agents out on the street to get these bad guys. And that creates this environment, which I think unfortunately has led to the tragedies in Minneapolis with Miss Good and Mr. Pretty. But you could avoid all that if you just cooperate and work with the federal government when it comes to enforcing federal law.
So let's talk about what's happening in Iran. Over the weekend, they aimed for the nuclear facilities in Israel, and then they shot off two intermediate range missiles, 2,500 miles to Diego Garcia. Neither hit. One collapsed before was taken out. And it just goes to show you the length of their missile range. Mm-hmm. Listen to the Prime Minister of Israel, Cut 11.
Well,
if you want proof that Iran endangers the entire world, the last 48 hours have given it. They have now the capacity to reach deep into Europe. They already have fired on a European country, Cyprus. They are putting everyone in their sights.
Is this going to help the president sell his story to our allies?
I think it does. And frankly, I think it just underscores what the president said all along. This is a terrible regime, evil regime, killed Americans, killed Israelis, killed countless other people around the world, killed a number of thousands of their own citizens. 47 years they've been doing this, the most evil place regime around. And you cannot let them get nuclear capability, not to mention what you just talked about there, these long range missiles. So this is why the president said, one thing I love about the president, I say this all the time, we make this job too complicated. What'd you tell the voters you were going to do when you ran for the job? If you get elected, go do what you said. No one does it better than President Trump. And one of the things he said is he was not going to let Iran get nuclear capability. That's why this effort is underway. And everyone knows how bad they are, it seems, except unfortunately some Democrats in Congress.
So we know in Ohio, Sherrod Brown is running against Senator Husted. Your thoughts about this matchup, and the fact is he's popular with the most Democrats in his state. Do you plan on helping out at all?
And
it's very close.
Yeah, no, I think Senator Husted is going to win. I think he's doing a good job. Of course, we're going to help out. And I think as we get closer to Election Day, you'll see President Trump coming into Ohio, which I think will be really helpful to Senator Husted with the president coming in and firing up Trump voters. As you know, Brian, Ohio used to be the bellwether state when it came to presidential elections. But the last three elections, Ohio has went for President Trump 8.5, 8.5, and then 11.5 in 2024. So he has changed our state into a much more Republican pro-Trump state. And I think it'd be real important for President Trump to get here in the fall. In the summer and the fall, and motivate Trump voters to come out for Senator Husted. But I think John's going to win.
Chairman Jordan, a couple other things. You have some say a divide on the right. People, the podcast world, maybe even the vice president of the United States, express reservations about this Iran deal. And you have this other guy, Joe Kent, resign and now doing all the shows saying that this is war was not an imminent, we didn't need to do it. There was no imminent threat there. If anybody knows the Republican Party and the MAGA movement, it's Chairman Jim Jordan. Where is the divide? And have you felt it? I mean, where is it? Tulsi Gabbard didn't want to do it either. And that was brought up over the weekend.
I don't really think there's a divide. I do become a little concerned about this anti-Israel, anti-Semitic element that I think has unfortunately now got almost control of the Democrat Party. We do not want that creeping into our party.
It is, though.
Well, it's important we stop it. And that's one of the reasons I'm getting involved in Republican primaries for congressional seats is I want to make sure we have a pro-Israel candidate and understands what and someone who's not in any way flirting with this crazy anti-Semitism that we see. So I don't see it happening in our party. I see some little signs of it, but not much. And I think we just got to stop that and be the party that understands that Israel's our dearest and closest ally and friend. And they're a special, special nation who's had to deal with all kinds of things in their part of the world. And their interests is in many ways aligned with ours. A nuclear-armed Iran is bad, as you just played the prime minister. A nuclear-armed Iran with these long-range missiles, in addition, is dangerous for everybody, for Americans, for Israelis and for everyone else, European countries and capitals now, as we've as you talked about. So, and frankly, I think it's bad for the Armenian people. So the president was clear; he was not going to let this happen. And I think as you've seen some of the polling, the vast majority of Republican voters support what the president's doing.
But this is the least politically oriented thing that a president has done in a long time with that I've noticed, because it's a big risk to the economy, one which was teetering. It's going to be hard to keep majorities. We're still the midterms of 7 months, 8 months away. I got it. But still, the president did it because it's the right thing, not to his political advantage. And Chairman, you must have recognized that, too.
Yeah, no, he did. And I say that all the time. He makes decisions that are in the best interest of America. Now, this decision, I think, also happened to be in the best interest of the world, best interest of our ally Israel, best interest, frankly, the Iranian people, hopefully long term. But this president does what he said. He told the country, I'm going to cut taxes. We did. He told the country he's going to secure the border. He did. I still remember the joint address he gave last Congress. Our last year, I mean, this latest State of the Union was phenomenal. But last year when he said in that joint address, he said, you know, people thought you needed new legislation to secure the border. Turned out all you needed was a new president. And it's true. Like, he does what he said he was going to do. And I think the American people appreciate that. And in the long run, that is good for, like I say, us, good for the world.
You've changed your opinion on FISA warrants. In what way?
Well, no, I'm still for reform in FISA. I've been after this FISA issue for 10 years. If you remember, it was 10 years ago when the Title I section of FISA, we saw that they were abusing that. That's when they spied on President Trump. So we still want to get the reforms that we enacted last year, make sure that those things are still working strong. But if the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief of this country, at a time when we're in the middle of a military conflict and operation in Iran, when we've had four terrorist attacks in the last 3 weeks here on the homeland, if the Commander-in-Chief says we can go for a temporary extension of the current FISA, after all the improvements we've made over the last 10 years, I think we can live with a temporary extension and then look to continue to do reforms as we move forward. So that is, I think, just a common sense position. We'll see how it shakes out. There's some debate in the Congress about some other reforms and maybe tying it to the Save America Act or something else. But the President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief, at a time when we're in a military operation, says, I want a short-term extension of the current FISA with all the reforms we've made over the last 8, 10 years. I think that's acceptable.
You got a full plate. Chairman Jim Jordan, thanks so much. Always appreciate your time.
Brian.
So does our audience, especially on WHIO. We know that. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. I do want to bring up what's happening in Texas, and that is James Tallarico. You would think that he's trying to make it seem like he eats meat, try to get a tough guy, act more like a Texan. But when it comes to God, remember when he said this, cut 29?
God is both masculine and feminine and everything in between. God is non-binary.
Okay, that's a guy I'm not following. Do you think he fixed it? Not really. Cut 30.
I know that I was being provocative with that comment. I made it on the floor of the House when the extremists in the Texas legislature were trying to pick on kids who were different. And while it's maybe provocative politically, I don't think it's controversial theologically. Most Christians believe that God is beyond gender.
So most don't. Most people are insulted by it. You had a chance to straighten it out. You had this big video after saying we're very proud wearing a mask and very proud that we're a vegetarian, campaign group. Now, you'd say that in Texas, not too sure how many cattle ranches you're going to win over. Then he has a picture of him eating meat.
Okay.
You think he's going to correct this? Easily correctable, but he's not. This guy is more radical than Beto. They say that he's going to flip that seat. The more I hear, the less I believe it. I'm not saying he's not talented. I'm not saying Beto's not talented. I'm just saying that that's not the right guy for that state.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. The President of the United States just spoke for 25 minutes. He's going to go to Memphis and thank the people that have brought crime down to almost zero in that troublesome state, city, when the governor of that state said, come on in, help out. Even though the mayor is Democrat, it worked. So the president's going to be going there right from Mar-a-Lago today. And then he made some news this morning by coming out and saying, we talked to Iran. And there's multiple points that we agree on. Number one, we're not going to be blowing up their infrastructure for 5 days. It doesn't say what Iran's not doing. And it doesn't say we're not bombing. But he says, I told the military, no bombing of their infrastructure for 5 days. Now, as you know, for 48 hours, the President of the United States came out and said that if I don't, in 48 hours, get the Strait of Hormuz open, I'm going to start bombing your infrastructure. So what exactly happened? Iran denies there were talks, but they always deny there were talks. They are liars. Jason Chaffetz is not. He was used to run oversight, Fox News contributor, former House Oversight Committee chair. A lot of quick moving parts, even from when I got up in the morning, getting ready for the morning for this show. So much has changed.
Yeah, the president certainly moved the markets. I mean, even from the markets were way up on the news of the talks with Iran. But then after the president started speaking, the markets went up another 150 points. I think he's given the world a lot of confidence that he's going to finish the job, that he's going to get the Strait of Hormuz open.
He's got to finish the job.
He does.
And it's tempting because he lives more for the economy than anybody else that's been in the White House. He lives it. He knows it. He sees an oil and gas. His great strengths are being hurt right now.
Yeah.
Almost like a mini pandemic when the pandemic cratered his economy.
Well, I think the key indicator is opening up the Strait of Hormuz. If goods and the oil can flow through the Strait of Hormuz without taking incoming shots, once those ships start flowing, I think then the market really starts zooming.
But if they keep on going after the oil fields in Qatar and the gas fields in Qatar, I should say, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia is using their pipeline, which they made. And we said, why are you using a pipeline? Now we know. And they're going to the Red Sea.
Yeah.
We got to hope the Houthis don't get involved. Because if Houthis get involved, they could shut down the Red Sea. Temporarily, they'll get bombed. But still, disruption, markets hate them.
They could, but we have so much firepower in the region, which we didn't have before, and gloves are off, and rockets are flying, and I think anybody who wants to continue to in perpetuity to fire is going to meet a certain death, and that message has been loud and clear. The president's still ahead of his timetable. He said it was going to take 5 weeks, and you know, that was the guess, and you know, we're probably 95% of the way there. But to your point, I think they need to finish it.
They need to finish it. And I just thought the big tell outside signing, getting the uranium there to admit uranium was enriched to 60% and 460 kilograms of it. That was one because, well, back and forth when you were in there, they have it. They don't have it. They're weaponizing. They're not weaponizing. They're up to 90%. No, they're not. They're 3%. They want to do it. All this stuff back and forth. You just sit there and go, do you believe a word they're saying? Well, some people do. Some people don't. Now we know it. The other thing is, when you go hit Diego Garcia or try 2,500 miles away, they now have intermediate range rockets, which could hit every capital in Europe. Now, who took missile defense out of Europe?
Yeah, we had missile defense in Poland, but Barack Obama was one of the first things.
Because he wanted to show a spirit of cooperation with Russia.
It was appeasement. That's what it was. He was sending him literally pallets of cash. He was trying to get rid of missile defense. Fortunately, we have what's called Aegis Ashore in Romania. That was a good move, but that predates what Obama was doing. And then, you know, we just have capabilities that are far superior. The other thing the president never gets enough credit for, and it's silent warriors, is the Space Force. Because if you have the Space Force that's operating properly, the ability to help communications and satellites and everything else is really pivotal.
Well, the other thing is, if it was bad, if it wasn't indispensable, Biden would have ended it in a hot second.
Yeah.
So he knew when he came in, this was a really good idea. Now there's a lot of pride there.
Right.
So I woke up today to find out at 11:30 last night, emergency vehicle, a Port Authority vehicle was on a runway and an Air Canada jet hit it. And both pilots are dead. 41 people went to the hospital. 32 have gotten out. We're still trying to figure out what went wrong. What are your thoughts about this?
It's just so
number
sad.
One is terrible. Obviously.
It's Tad. It's you know, and you listen already. They get the communication.
Happened at LaGuardia.
Yeah, LaGuardia, and you hear this communication coming out of the tower saying, "I messed up." It sounds like it's human error. There, you know, it's a terribly complicated job, but it sounds like it was just a mistake, and mistakes happen, and it's sad. You know, and you hate to lose two pilots to this, but that's what happened.
And then a fire at Newark Airport shut it down for an hour and a half. So there's no traffic in and out of LaGuardia until 2 p.m. And then you have TSA agents, 400 quit, thousands more just not showing up. I cannot believe they get paid $40,000. That's it. That means they take home like $28,000. And I found out they only get paid once a month. By the way, that's very hard to budget a family getting paid once a month. Having said that. And now they just say, listen, I can't miss a paycheck. I got to go find my own paycheck. So this is incredible that this strike continues 20 plus days.
And this is the second time the Democrats have done this. We've gone through this before and people have had to go without a paycheck. I think the whole ICE in the airports, keep in mind, there are multiple components of Homeland Security at the airports. I thought what Hakeem Jeffries said, though, was probably the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard. When he said that ICE officers, that he was afraid that they were going to shoot them.
We have it. Let's listen.
The last thing that the American people need are for untrained ICE agents to be deployed at airports all across the country, potentially to brutalize or, in some instances, kill them. We've already seen how ICE conducts itself. These are untrained individuals when it comes to doing the current job that they have, for the most part, let alone deploying them in close exposure in highly sensitive situations.
And that was to Dana Bash, who sat there as if they took her mic away. They just let this guy go off. They don't let anybody else go off like this guy.
They're going to kill people at the airports and brutalize people at the airports? Are you kidding me? First of all, he's so naive. ICE already operates at the airports, along with other components that are out there. Customs and Border Patrol is there. ICE is there. ERO is there. So don't tell me they don't know what they're doing.
What cop family would ever vote for him, for a Democrat?
And he represents New York City. Does he not understand the value of making sure that we've got a strong, vibrant security force at our airports? How do you represent New York City after 9/11 and have that kind of attitude about how they don't care?
So what are we going to do with this impasse? No more roving patrols, no more Bovino, no more Christy Noem. Now I'm going to put some type of identity, but not their names, on their uniforms. So why are they not doing this? Judicial warrants and masks are still a part of it. If you want to add a couple of weeks to training or do something about the curriculum, go ahead. You know, if you see a hole in it, you study it. Okay, you want to go do that? Fine.
But in Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator, who's going to be the
only chance.
But they didn't ask him these questions during this confirmation hearing. I think the Democrats like the issue. They want chaos. That's the only pathway to their success at the midterms. They don't want to actually solve the problem. They've already funded ICE for years in the big, beautiful bill. So they're hurting things that we don't get to see every day. Coast Guard, Secret Service, CISA does the cyber infrastructure, all of these things. HSI, which is Homeland Security Investigations. You want to go out and find a potential terrorist. Who do they think's doing that besides the FBI? It's HSI.
So here's what
they're not funded.
Here's what Senator John Kennedy said. He's just offering this as an idea. Cut 23.
I would accept the Democrats' offer to open up everything except ICE at DHS. And then the very next day, I would pass a reconciliation bill which crafts a budget for ICE. We can do it without any Democratic votes. Certainly the Democrats are welcome to join us. We can do it with all Republican votes. That's how we pass the one big, beautiful bill. We don't need Democrats to do anything with respect to ICE. They think we ought to abolish ICE, just like they wanted to abolish police, just like they think that kids ought to be able to change genders at recess. Not all Democrats are that way, Trey, as you know, But the Karen wing, the loon wing of the Democratic Party, is calling these shots.
What about that idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think Senator Kennedy's onto it.
But isn't ICE already funded? Can you explain this to me? ICE is funded.
It is through the Big Beautiful Bill, but you, in reconciliation, you can do some ongoing funding for ICE, couple it with the $200 billion they need to replenish for the firepower of the United States military and do that under reconciliation. You have one a shot at reconciliation per fiscal year. So we use the one that was already done with the Big Beautiful Bill. What you can't do on this is legislate. And I think there's there was a feeling that, hey, in order to get that the Save America Act done, you would have to do some of that. But I think the senator's right, but I call their bluff. And you know what? The other thing is, Brian, we need single issue bills. If you do Save America, just do voter ID.
I don't need gender sports stuff in there.
No, I don't need all the. Those are good points. But bring those bills up one at a time. If they fail, like, put people on the record. I want to see the Republicans that will vote no against Save America just as its own. And you know what? If a bill fails, there's nothing that says you can't bring it up again.
Yeah.
Bring it up multiple times.
Too much in there,
yes.
And it gives you an out.
Yep.
When the American public, 80% of the American public on the whole wants voter ID, you could say, "Well, I want voter ID too, but I don't want the gender stuff."
Two-page single subject.
Before you go, I want to bring up this whole thing that's happening: raising taxes in blue states. Senator Cory Booker wants to be president. He has an idea to raise taxes. Washington State billionaires tax. Billionaires tax in California is now offered, and now in New York, the mayor's pushing the governor to raise taxes. And then the governor looks around and goes, I'm losing my tax base. In Massachusetts, it was $7 billion out of their tax base. So listen to Kathy Hochul. Listen to what she said in 2022. Listen to what she said a couple of days later, cut 27.
Just jump on a bus and head down to Florida where you belong, okay? Get out of town.
I need people who are high net worth to support the generous social programs that we want to have in our state. Right?
Who wants
now,
that?
There are some patriotic millionaires who stepped up. Okay, cut me the checks. I mean, just if you want to be supportive, but maybe the first step should be go down to Palm Beach and see who you can bring back home, because our tax base has been eroded.
That's a one-way trip to Palm Beach, because once you get down there, enjoy the weather and the lack of taxes, you ain't coming back to New York.
You don't go to Palm Beach and say, come back and pay high taxes. What's your pitch? Your pitch is, if you have one pitch is, we've cut taxes, we're sorry you left, we've cut them, please come back. Or the estate tax. Now, the estate tax is going to be destroying everyone's wealth, so no one's going to stay in New York at all, unless you want your kids to hate you.
Well, you need to talk to your wife, Brian, because there's no reason why we can't get you down to Florida.
Right.
I mean, this is...
Or Utah.
We'd love it if you came to Utah. Your dogs would love it out there.
I tell you. Got some space.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, there's... To have the governor almost grovel to try to come back, they've created this mess. And Zohra Mamdani and the governor, they have created this utopia of liberal things, and they can't now. Oh, whoops! We got to figure out how to pay for it.
Right, but it's happening everywhere.
No, it's happening in Virginia. They're the moderate. Then they come in. They want to increase gas tax or taxes. Yeah. Now they have all this problem with energy prices. Even in New York, right? Upstate New York, they wanted to go green, hardcore green, and now you can't afford to live.
So one of the greenest governors comes out and says, I want to get out of what Governor Cuomo signed us up for. And I said it was going to be better. You have to have gas powered cars. They have no utilities. They shut down their nuclear power plant for no reason. Yeah. And now they say, as they get close to it, oh, I got to reverse this. They're going to have to do the same thing as the next governor of California. Yeah. They're going to have to reverse. They're going to have no people there at all.
No, we had a power plant in Utah. It was coal-fired power plant, provided tons of electricity solely to California. And they said, well, we don't want any coal-fired, so they shut it down. Well, good luck. Now they don't have an electricity source. And what do you think is going to happen? The prices soar.
And now with AI, you're going to need all this energy. The other thing they got to do is the president's got to continue to talk about how with all these AI companies, they're going to build their own power.
Yeah.
Because in Michigan, they just rejected, in the process of rejecting a data center because they're worried about utility costs for the everyday person. So they got to message that. But the other stuff about raising taxes to get more for generous social programs instead of attacking the fraud, which is the other issue that I think people can get
behind.
That's
right. They're doing nothing to address the fraud. But, you know, childcare, it sounds great, but they're spending $4.7 billion in New York. And they now that's not enough. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's a lot.
Free preschool is not free.
Yeah.
Someone's paying for it.
Free buses.
It's just you're not paying for it.
Free buses are not.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
And no one will go on them because it's going to be like a living Armageddon. With the crazy Star Wars bar scene that we're going to be seeing on there.
I'll go on with you, go on.
Yeah, and we got to bring some security on with us, too, with two soccer players looking for trouble. Jason Chaffetz, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Thank you.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces. They're unable to talk to each other. But we've had very strong talks. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner had them. They went, I would say, perfectly. I would say that if they carry through with that, it'll end that problem, that conflict. And I think it'll end it very, very substantially. We have very much in mind our partners in the Middle East. We've had great relationships with a lot of them, as you know. A lot of them were surprisingly hit. And I was surprised to see it, and so was everyone else. But we have, they're very much in mind in the discussions. So the discussions took place yesterday. They went into yesterday evening. They want very much to make a deal. We'd like to make a deal, too. We're going to get together today by probably phone, because it's very hard to find a country. It's very hard for them to get out, I guess. But we'll at some point very, very soon meet. We're doing a 5-day period. We'll see how that goes. And if it goes well, we're going to end up with settling this. Otherwise, we'll just keep bombing our little hearts out.
Well, they're still bombing. They're just not hitting energy sites. And the President of the United States, that was him about 30 minutes ago. So I'm not sure. The President says he's been speaking to him in detail. Now, an Iran official, not named, told Fars News Agency, which is the Farsi News Agency, which is aligned with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, that there's no direct or indirect contacts with Trump. The unnamed source says that Trump is backed down after hearing that our targets would include all power stations in West Asia. The Iranian major general said the use of new secret weapon will begin soon and will bring an end to this enemy's operation. The taunts came after Trump said what he said. Doubt any of that on the Farsi side. Sounds farcical to me. We'll find out. Quick moving. The markets love it, though. They're up 900 points. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, Marcus Lemonis joins us.
Interested in it? Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now. Of course, I had that horrible news of LaGuardia, where a Port Authority vehicle was parked on the tarmac and was hit by a Canadian plane. It looks like air traffic control was screwed up. I actually hear the audio, and he says, you know, that's my fault. But both pilots are dead. 31 are still in the hospital as of when we started the show. 42 were hospitalized immediately. Scary stuff. But now LaGuardia is shut down, contributing to the chaos of the airports. Marcus Lemonis joins us now, Fox 2 contributor, host of The Fix, The Fixer on Fox Business, executive chair and CEO of Bed Bath & Beyond. Marcus, it's hard keeping up with all your jobs. I mean, you just told me about another business you just bought.
Cut that list down. Just go with Fox News contributor.
That's what you want?
I mean, that's what it is.
They want to know what else you do?
They do, but I think it's always important to keep some separation. So
Okay.
I have a day job, a night job, and a weekend job.
Understood. What do you like? You do all the shows on the Fox Business too. Which show do you enjoy doing most?
I enjoy on Fox Business. I enjoy Big Money, and I co-anchor Bottom Line once in a while. But on Fox, I enjoy Outnumbered the most.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because
I get invited more
than I get invited to your show.
That's true.
That's usually what happens.
He's always knocking on the door, and yeah. I always say, Mark, it's not today.
Yeah. Right?
That never happens. I think it was, I one of the first shows you did?
Yeah. Right. When I first came here with The Fixer, that's where we started.
Right. So we both live in the Ponte Vedra area.
Yep.
What about that shooting that took place at Sawgrass?
Walgreens.
Yeah,
Walgreens,
what was that about?
Where you pick up all your meds?
Yeah, well, all of it. And I have a lot of prescriptions.
You know what? I was out of town. Never in a million years would I ever imagine something like that would happen in Ponte Vedra, except for the night that I was in my pool late at night and there was a guy in my backyard.
And
he ran away and the cops came and did nothing. And ever since then, I don't go out at night.
Wow.
I'm too frightened.
The one thing is, you always heard the cops around there and they say, you don't have to worry about crime in this area, but
But I mean, there's, you know,
everywhere.
Stuff happens.
Things
stuff
can happen. Let's talk about the markets. The markets are up, 800, 900 points?
Yeah.
And it's over the president coming out saying he's having talks with Iran and they're not going to hit infrastructure for 5 days.
Yeah. It's a little confusing for me because I love the fact that we took the situation in Iran so seriously and we all knew that there were financial consequences, which we can get to in a minute. I'm a little confused by we're having strong talks with the folks in Iran and on Friday, there's nobody to talk to. So I just want to make sure that we're just finding some stability and finding our feet here. There are real lives and real situations at play. I think the president was right to go in and solve the situation in Iran, or at least attempt to solve the situation in Iran. The question is, how long does it go on? When does it end? And what's going to happen to the economy? Because the economy's feeling this right now.
So, you know, what's interesting is people go, you know, I don't think there was a nuclear threat. Well, now we found out about the uranium enriched to 60%. So, okay, put that argument aside.
Yeah.
And then you find out they want to put a rocket, an intermediate range rocket that went 2,500 miles. Well, that's the other thing. You have a rocket that could hit Europe, those capitals. So it is your problem, too. And those people that say they haven't gotten the science down, well, you're wrong. Just because we knocked it down doesn't mean it's not a threat.
Right.
You know, we just saw with the best missile defense around, an Iron Dome over the overlapping technologies, it looks like they missed. The missile defense missed the missile, and it hit right near their nuclear site in Israel. So this is a threat.
It's a real threat. And I think people understand how that dome works and they're able to break the bomb up in the middle of the air into a million pieces that still hit. This is a threat that needs to be resolved. We're also feeling that many Americans are feeling the threat of what this means to them back home.
Yeah.
What it means financially to them.
Because now diesel's up, which means food's going to be up.
Brian, in the most simplistic terms, if people could understand the economic piece, not the political piece or the peace piece, but it affects the four Bs. It affects the barrel. It affects the boats moving through there. It affects the basket for the consumer. And unfortunately, it has the ability to also affect the balance sheet for companies. And those Bs are putting a lot of pressure on President Trump. The question is, does he push through that pressure or does he start to bend? And that may be the question of this Monday.
You know, it's interesting. I'm really heartened by the Gulf state stance. Now, I know Qatar has reached out and trying to broker some type of deal. But for the most part, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain have doubled and tripled down, kicking Iranian ambassadors and diplomats out of their country, threatening to get involved militarily in Saudi Arabia's sake, talking about how Iran can't be trusted, messaging to us, make sure this regime is crippled. If I told you 10, 15 years ago that the Gulf states would be united on an American effort, and now they're doubling and tripling down, and I saw the Wall Street Journal story over the weekend that said, if Iran thought by attacking the Gulf states, they would begin to dislodge American military from there. It's actually had the exact opposite effect. They want more military protection from us, not less.
I think those Gulf states are also feeling far more threatened by seeing the arsenal that Iran has compiled and knowing that they're not concerned about launching it. Never would I have ever imagined that a bomb would hit Dubai. Never.
Have you been there?
I've never been there, but I've seen it. It looks like a beautiful fantasy land, but I never would have imagined that that would have been under attack.
So before you got in, I was just reading that Iran says it's not true, we're not having talks, and that they have a secret weapon they're about to use. So I'm not sure how the markets react to that, but and that was an unnamed official to an Iranian news source.
There has to be somebody that understands that the long-term, the longevity of Iran is going to be based on them not having their entire infrastructure wiped out. And when President Trump laid down the five-day gauntlet, either they listened or he's doing what he does best, which is the art of negotiation, is to drag everybody to the table. I hope and only hope that this isn't the instability that the market hates. If we find out that there were no talks, the market won't be up 900. It'll be down 1900.
Understood. Yeah, the Wall Street Journal talked about a ceasefire, what it would mean, the fallout since then. If you want to, if you have a scenario where the Gulf, where this ends, and Iran knowing that at any point the Strait of Hormuz can be a choke point, if that still exists as a threat, that's going to be a huge problem because they're going to feel more empowered than ever to do this again.
Financially, they'll feel more empowered, but nobody's spending enough time talking about what the work in Venezuela will open up. And while it's going to take a while to free up production in Venezuela, Venezuela, I think, was strategically resolved before Iran, largely to set a precedent that Iran and the Strait of Hormuz cannot be the choke point any longer. It is a choke point, but I don't think it'll be the choke point any longer. And people are going to learn how to go around Africa, which is going to make it far more expensive. But I think you want that vulnerability of Hormuz to go away.
So over the weekend, I was able to speak to the Miami Herald reporter on the Cuban beat, who's very tight with the State Department, and said that we're in talks with the grandson of Raul Castro because he tends to have capitalistic tendencies. He might be someone we can deal with. I've talked to other people who in one of the dissident groups that said the name Castro will never be accepted by the Cuban community who believe there will be change. This resonates with you personally.
It does.
As you also know, the Southern Florida community.
Yeah.
Tell me how you feel about all this.
Well, I grew up in Miami, so I feel like I identify as Cuban, but I also spent 10 days in Cuba in 2018 doing a documentary on capitalism or the lack of it. And the people there ultimately do not believe that anything will ever change. I think this idea that capitalism could change it is right. If you visit Cuba, for those who have never been, and you see pictures about time standing still, it really looks exactly the same as it did in the 1950s. The challenge is you have a lot of young people who have accessed social media, who have accessed the internet, who now want to start businesses and want to grow businesses. And I dealt with one brother and sister who had a booming business, the equivalent of a Starbucks, and the government basically limits their ability to grow. I think you're going to see this capitalistic tendency, the ability to monetize the island, the ability to make it a beautiful place of which it is. I think you could see the grandson change his tune.
So I watched the grandson is somebody they think Marco Rubio is assessing whether he can deal with him. But do you believe the name Castro will always go with communism, regardless of what he says?
Yes.
Because Castro, Fidel lied to us, too, in the 50s.
Yes. I think that the Cuban people and Cuban Americans will never, ever trust that name.
So I want you to hear what the Cuban deputy foreign minister said over the weekend on Meet the Press. Still talking tough. Cut 17.
Our military is always prepared. And in fact, it is preparing these days for the possibility of military aggression. We would be naive if, looking at what's happening around the world, we would not do that. But we truly hope that it doesn't occur. We don't see why it would have to occur, and we find no justification whatsoever. Why would the government of the United States force its country to take military action against a neighboring country like Cuba?
So, still saying the military is ready to take a stand. I watched the interview. It was about 20 minutes.
I listened to him, and it sounds like a guy that I would know in Miami. He doesn't sound like a local in Cuba. It is true, though. And then when you say things like, we're going to take something, I'm thinking about taking something, no matter what the relationship is, you start to get the hair up on the back of your neck and saying, we're going to have to defend ourselves. It's probably
the president used those terms.
I know. And I think he sometimes says things in jest or maybe exaggerates or wants to sort of make a stand. I don't think right now in this moment the American people want another conflict.
Right.
I just don't think they do.
But they wouldn't mind a transition.
They wouldn't mind a peaceful transition,
yes.
But they don't want more conflict. I don't think any party would be for that right
now. You know, it's interesting to see what's going to happen because it's not going to get better for them. Because the oil is stopped from Mexico, the oil is stopped from Venezuela. There's a ship coming from Russia, one turned around, and I'm not sure the other one's going to get sure. I'm not sure if we're going to let that go. And then you're just temporarily halting things. Their second grid went down again over the weekend. So, you know, the status quo does not work for Cuba.
The status quo doesn't work, Brian, but I've been alive for 52 years and it's been the same and still works. And so you have to ask yourself, we say it doesn't work. What are their natural resources? If they can't access energy, that is the choke point. If they can't access energy.
Right. But the people were able to riot and they didn't get shot. So we're wondering, maybe the answer to Cuba is the prisons. Anybody who rose up with any democratic inklings was jailed, and maybe opening that up would be part of a deal.
We need to finish things in Iran. We need to get ready for the midterm elections, which are not looking as good as I think everybody wants them to. The economy's not looking great. Inflation's not looking great. And I think we need to settle everybody down and get the rhetoric back in line.
Right. And I think that'll happen when you come to the right conclusion in Iran. But I just think the right conclusion might take a little bit more time than we thought, than anyone thought. But it also shows you, it's almost like attacking a tumor and you go in there and attack it and the tumor's resilient. It makes you want to get that tumor out even more. And that's what it reminds me of now.
The resilience makes it feel like a real threat. And the fact that it reminds people that it's a real threat makes them want to be more aggressive. You're right.
All right. Marcus Lemonis, thanks so much. A guy I will introduce now, despite all your titles and all your businesses, Fox News contributor. It'll help our relationship, correct?
There you go, buddy.
Back in
a
moment.
We'll see you then.
So diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, golly. Well, what if Donald shouts at me? What do I say, Labby?
Just be yourself, Prime Minister. Yourself is who everyone likes.
Hello? Oh, sod that scary, scary, wonderful president. Why is he so blubber difficult to talk to?
Sir, just be honest and tell him we can't send any more ships to the Strait of Hormuz.
Oh, crumbs. I just hate conflict so much.
Are you referring to the war or this phone call?
Isn't there a way I could not do both? I just want to keep him happy, Lammy.
So that was, I guess, was that the cold open?
I'm not sure if it was the cold open. It was a skit with Starmer trying to call Trump.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting, but I just, why?
I know. Plus, it's a real reach. It's a real reach outside people like us who do this all the time to think that we understand the stand that Prime Minister Starmer is taking. You know, I'm not being sure people are like, what's Britain doing? I don't think there's been so many prime ministers. We used to know the guy, you know, or woman, six, seven years. You know, you knew Tony Blair for a while and you knew these guys and you don't really know them anymore.
But do you think, too, because of now it's the change in, like, you know, Queen Elizabeth isn't there and it seems like Trump has a very friendly relationship with the royal family now compared to, you think that's a part of it?
Well, what's interesting is he does, you know, I guess the Queen, he liked the Queen. The Queen reminded him of his mother. Then he goes over and visits. They treated him great. And I think people are trying to figure out Trump and they realize, stop judging him, just deal with him. And that's what's happening. There was a big story today about how the rise of conservatism in Europe. But a lot of people, like Nigel Farage, say, you know, he's my friend, and I agree with a lot of the stuff. I don't agree with all the stuff. So that's what these men and women are doing, saying, I'm picking my spots to agree with them, but I'm not criticizing them. And I think that's one of the key. The minute you come out and you're critical and let's have at it, like the Colombia president. So in other words, you know, pick your spots.
True, but that's also life. I feel like people here should learn from that too.
But there's this sense that Europe could say anything about us being, you know, being like naive or bullying, and we would just take it with other presidents. And, you know, things would be done behind closed doors. This president goes forward and goes, I just got off the phone. I'm done with France, you know. So I just had this conversation. I'm really disappointed with Denmark's reaction to Greenland, where we used to have to wait to get that story to get a source that may have indicated, higher-up source that says the president's disappointed. Now we know. Did you see that Denmark was coming up with a military plan to bomb the runways in Greenland to prevent us from landing and take it over?
I missed that.
How crazy is that? They're more exercised about us taking Greenland than they are about Iran sending a rocket over, or there would be, you know, a would-be dirty bomb in their country. But that's what they're going to do. Can you imagine them bombing their own airports to prevent us from taking Greenland?
I would hope that was just a what if in the most extreme situation.
I don't know. Remember they were sending like 12 people over here?
12.
You know, British were sending 12 people and France was sending 10. And they were going to hold on to... Think about that in retrospect. What an overreaction that was.
It was ridiculous. It really was over the top.
So I guess we'll see what happens. But I did not watch SNL this weekend, but I did watch 60 Minutes, which is very similar to what we run. They open up with the fact that we can't build ships, that South Korea can build ships, criticize Donald Trump for making South Korea build ships here. And number two is rare earth, and how, without giving the president credit, we realize we have to go rare earth, and we're finding mines in our country that have this thing called rare earth because, drum roll please, China has it locked on all rare earth. This administration, whatever you want to say, they're staying ahead of it. They see the big problems and they're trying to fix it. And they're seeing the biggest problem and they're addressing it. Because by addressing Iran, you're also addressing Moscow and China. Keep your eye on the big picture. Yes, Russia right now can sell oil. I get it. And Iran can sell oil temporarily. But a month from now, it's going to go all right back, sanctions and all.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, you there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a big hour coming your way. Trey Yinks is standing by. He's fresh off his meeting with, actually his interview with the Prime Minister Netanyahu, big exclusive. And Brilliant Hollihan's going to be with us, political commentator, author of the upcoming book, Make America Talk Again. And Brilliant was somebody who was mentored by Charlie Kirk, to be friends since he was about 12 years old. Very impressive. If you want to know where the MAGA world is at, he'd be a good barometer. But before we get to Trey standing by in Tel Aviv, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We would be naive if, looking at what's happening around the world, we would not do that. But we truly hope that it doesn't occur. We don't see why it would have to occur.
That is Cuba opening up open now. The clock is ticking on them. Their crumbling communist outpost is about to fall. But how it goes down and what our role is key.
Number two.
These Democrats are so crazy. I mean, if you're in an airport and you see these long lines, you better know. I think most of them do know. It's Democrats and Chuck Schumer that are causing the long lines at airports.
Intolerable. Denying TSA pay has crippled air travel. 400-plus agents have decided to resign. And only one party is to blame. Democrats. This has to be solved today.
Number one.
If you want proof that Iran endangers the entire world, the last 48 hours have given it. They have now the capacity to reach deep into Europe. They are putting everyone in their sights.
That is, of course, the Prime Minister talking to Trey Yinks. Week four of the war with Iran, and the stakes have never been higher as the desperate regime rockets travel 2,000-plus miles, something they deny was possible. It now puts the capitals of France, England, and Germany, and everywhere else, right in the crosshairs. Will people still say this is a war of choice? Joining us now is Trey Yinks. Trey, the president just spoke and just said both sides are now talking. Have you gotten confirmation of that from the Iran side?
The Iranians are saying that no talks are taking place, but more and more reporting is coming out indicating that there are indeed conversations happening. And Israeli media is reporting right now that U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are negotiating with the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament. Specifically, other reports indicate there could be an in-person meeting as soon as this week in Islamabad, Pakistan. So a lot of moving parts in this.
And I've talked to military people, and they say, you know, the economic pressure is great, and it is real, even though the market's up 1,000 points now on that, what you just said, for those reasons. But to not finish the job would also bring even additional criticism. And not finishing the job, give them the capability of continuing to lie, build a nuclear weapon, and soon intercontinental ballistic missiles. Now they have intermediate missiles that go 2,500 miles.
Yeah, the Iranians have shown over the course of Operation Epic Fury that they still have the ability to launch ballistic missiles. And while a lot of their production lines have been taken out, and we know that their drone program has been largely destroyed by the U.S. and Israeli strikes, they still have hundreds, if not thousands, of missiles in their arsenal, and they still have the ability to respond when and where they like. And so this threat is certainly not totally obliterated, and their enriched uranium is still within the country. And so if negotiations happen, you imagine that enriched uranium will be at the top of the discussion, whether it would be secured or removed. But in the past, the Iranians have been unwilling to move forward with this part of the negotiation. And so, look, talks can happen, and we've seen covering wars in the Middle East, they often do take place. But the result of the talks will be, I think, what everyone is focused on in the days and weeks ahead.
So here, Trey Yinks joining us from Israel. Here's some of your interview with the prime minister over the weekend, Cut 11.
If you want proof that Iran endangers the entire world, the last 48 hours have given it. They have now the capacity to reach deep into Europe. They already have fired on a European country, Cyprus. They are putting everyone in their sights.
He went on to say, cut 13.
Israel and the United States are working together for the entire world. And it's time to see the leaders of the rest of the countries join up. I'm happy to say that I can see some of them beginning to move in that direction. I mean, but more is needed.
They have to see the threat now. I know this is not the way it's typically done. We're used to ramp-ups that take months and messaging at the UN. But this president's different than that. And he is not doesn't give much credence to going through those traditional channels, Trey.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the president, even before all of this began, gave the Iranians an opportunity to reach a diplomatic solution, and they rejected the offer from President Trump. They were offered unlimited nuclear fuel forever, and they rejected that. And they came to the negotiating table and said they had enough enriched uranium to make 11 nuclear bombs. And so it does raise questions about where we are today in terms of the state of play on the battlefield. And yes, these U.S. and Israeli strikes have been quite successful in decimating the military structure of the Iranian regime. But I just go back to the reality on the ground. And, you know, we hear from Central Command the statistic that 90% of Iran's ballistic missile fire is down from the first days of the war. But that's not actually the most important statistic. The question is what missiles they have left and what capabilities they have left. They certainly were not going to fire at the same rate they did in the first 48 hours, and everyone knew that. But we don't have the answer to that question. And Israeli officials that I've talked to have hinted at the fact that both the Americans and the Israelis know the threat is still there, and it is quite high. And so what we saw over the weekend, the two ballistic missiles that targeted the Diego Garcia air base in the Indian Ocean, that was an indication the Iranians were not being truthful about the range of their ballistic missiles. And now Israeli officials say this is proof they can target European capitals from Rome to Paris and beyond. And so it does raise this question of what is left of the Iranian regime and their ability. And if there's an off-ramp now, what does that mean for the reason that this operation began? Is the threat actually destroyed, or is it reduced for a number of years? These are all questions that I think U.S. officials will have to answer as this appears to be headed toward diplomacy. And again, these talks, it's very preliminary. We heard just hours ago from the president that this was even taking place, and it sounds like just over the past 48 hours, the conversations even began. But again, you have to look at the statements, not only from state media in Iran, who is rejecting the idea of talks, but also the person that is reportedly on the other end of these conversations. Again, reports right now indicate that the Speaker of Iran's parliament is the man who is leading the talks for the Iranians. And as recently as January, he was speaking at a rally in Tehran, and he directly threatened President Trump. He said, quote, delusional Trump, do not believe the lies that you are told. And he goes on to say, we will not tolerate the blood of our people, the blood of our scientists, and the blood of our commanders. And he's speaking before a rally of pro-regime hardened supporters of Iran's former supreme leader, who was killed in the opening strikes of this operation. And so it's surprising to me, and again, I have not been able to independently confirm who's on the other side negotiating on behalf of the Iranians, but there are other relatively, for the regime, more moderate figures, even the foreign minister and the president, Masoud Pezeshkian, that are considered less hardline and would probably make more concessions as it relates to the country's nuclear program and ballistic missile stockpile. And so, again, this is all very early, but it does indicate that the Americans, while they are continuing to strike, are looking for diplomatic solutions.
But the thing is, Trey, and you know this better than anybody, that if I talk to the president and he's moderate, but the IRGC is not going to listen to him, what's the point? And we saw that. Well, we're not going to hit our neighbors. We're only going to hit the military bases there. And the next thing you know, the IRGC is rocketing the neighbors, the Gulf state neighbors. So we said the president's just, or the foreign minister just has no street cred with the people. So what kind of deal could they actually cut? We need to speak to somebody that actually speaks for the country. But over the weekend,
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a really great point that you make, Brian, because when you look at who's in charge of Iran right now, there is no clear leader. Mostaba Khamenei, the person who was elected to be the supreme leader and replace his father, has not been seen. There's been no proof of life publicly that he's even still living, and he's believed to be injured and incapacitated. And so the question is, if they make a deal with the Speaker of the Parliament, will that deal actually be adhered to by the IRGC, the same IRGC that is currently threatening international shipping lanes and has proven time and time again over the past 3 weeks that they are willing to launch very large missiles at U.S. forces and allies across the region? And we saw this weekend. I mean, they fired a ballistic missile into a residential area, and they injured more than 100 people in just one strike. And they have the capability to do that today, tomorrow, and next week. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different things to address here, and you really raise a great point. How do you enforce this type of deal, understanding that the Iranians prepared for a mosaic defense, as they call it, a defense in which they have given the IRGC the ability to operate on their own. And we saw that before. They said they're not going to target what they called their friendly neighbors. And President Trump told me he was most surprised by the fact that Qatar, Kuwait, the UAE, Bahrain were taking incoming fire when they weren't even launching strikes against Iran. And so while they could come to the negotiating table, how do you address these other issues? And again, I think that's the question that remains.
So over the weekend where you did the interview, I think in Dimona, a city 8 miles away from Israel's main nuclear facility, got hit by rocket fire. And many people thought that would be the place where you had the best missile defense, you know, the cross section of David Sling, Iron Dome, the Arrow system, and the THAAD system, but it broke through. Have they figured out why? Is Iran figuring out how to beat the missile defense? Did they just get lucky?
And they are. They are figuring out how to get around Israel's air defense systems. And while the interception rate is still quite high, some of these missiles are getting through, especially the cluster munitions. The cluster munitions, they are unable to shoot down. When they explode over the skies of Tel Aviv, as we saw last night, there are just too many pieces of shrapnel and bomblets that are raining down. They can't shoot them all down. And so that was actually not even the case in Dimona. In Dimona and Arad, these two cities that are just next to each other in southern Israel, and we spoke with the prime minister in Arad just next to Dimona, they took two direct missile impacts, and these were not cluster munitions. And this is very close to Israel's nuclear research facilities and other things that the Israelis do not publicly talk about, but are reported quite widely, very sensitive programs in Israel. And so it does raise questions about the ability for defense against these missiles. And that's not to mention both countries that don't have as advanced air defense systems, and European countries, many of which do not have any prepared at this level for taking these types of medium-range ballistic missiles. And I also think it's important to note here, when we look at what's happening, the Iranians still have the ability to respond when and where they please. When the Israeli strikes were conducted against the South Pars gas field last week, the Iranians immediately responded with strikes against Ras Laffan facility just over the Persian Gulf in Qatar. When reportedly the United States used bunker buster bombs against the Natanz nuclear facility, immediately after, the Iranians fired toward Dimona, where the nuclear research center is for the Israelis. And so this is an indication that, yes, there have been successful strikes conducted by the United States and Israel. Yes, they are degrading the Iranian leadership. Yes, they took out the Ayatollah. But no, it does not mean that the Iranians are unable to fight and that they don't still pose a threat to the region.
So I understand, and you probably know all these names, but Amir Bahram, the director general of Israel's Ministry of Defense, is in Washington to ask for more interceptors and munitions, according to three Israeli officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity. It was unclear whether the Americans have agreed to provide more. And your thoughts about how we're doing on how they're doing on interceptors, and is it a desperate situation, or they're just worried about what could be happening?
It's interesting, because what they're willing to say publicly and what they're willing to say privately are two different things. When I spoke to the president, he indicated that during the 12-day war last summer, Israel was actually having trouble with interceptors. And we actually saw a lot more impacts last summer. And while they prepared both offensively and defensively for Epic Tiri, the operation unfolding right now, they don't have an unlimited supply of interceptors, and neither does the United States, for that matter. Many interceptors were given to the Ukrainians during the Biden administration. It takes a long time. It's very costly to produce these interceptors, and the Iranians know that. They know, especially when it comes to these cluster munitions, they are trying to burn through as much of the interception stockpile as possible. And some of these lower-range systems, like the Iron Dome, for example, can't shoot down ballistic missiles. The Iron Dome is mostly used for the rocket fire that comes from Hamas or Hezbollah, and Hezbollah is still firing rockets at this time, and so they have to burn interceptors for that. Actually, as we speak, special instructions were given to residents of the north to prepare for another large barrage from Hezbollah, an organization backed by Iran that I'm told has up to 11 or 12,000 rockets and missiles still in their arsenal. And so there just isn't an unlimited supply. And it makes sense that the Israelis are looking for more support. But the Iranians know this as well, and they're trying to leverage the situation and continuing a heavy amount of fire. Because at the end of this, right, there is an outcome. Let's say there is a diplomatic outcome to this. The Iranians and what is left of the hardline regime, and there are a number of officials left who could run the country and are still politically aligned with the individuals and senior leadership that were killed, they can claim victory. They can say, look, we exhausted the Israelis and the Americans to the point where they wanted to come to the negotiating table. And it may not be true, but internally, it doesn't matter, right? Because they go to state media and they say, look, we survived this fight. Yes, we lost a number of our officials. Yes, they hit us hard, but we survived. And it gives them the ability, just like Hamas, actually, inside Gaza right now, where the group is still in control of parts of the strip, the ability to claim victory and then go to the streets and say, yes, this was a round, and they will say they won.
Yep, and make things even worse for the people there. So that's why how this ends matters almost more important than how it started. Trey Yinks, thanks so much. Truly appreciate your perspective. Great job getting the interview with the Prime Minister.
Thank you, Gilman. Talk you to
you soon. All right. When we come back, I'll take some calls. 1-866-408-7669. And the brilliant Holly Hamm will be joining us, somebody who's mentored by Charlie Kirk. He's got an upcoming book coming out, too. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. You know, I was just building on what Trey was saying and trying to find out about the parliamentary speaker in Tehran. This is a quote from him yesterday. He evidently is the person that reached out to, or vice versa, I think reached out to Kushner and Witkoff. He's saying, Tehran's speaker said, by threatening us, by saying financial entities that finance the U.S. military budget, saying Iran claims the strait is open to everyone except adversaries, that it will strike the energy infrastructure and water facilities of its Gulf neighbors if Trump follows through with the threat to hit the electricity grid. Also says that those who purchase U.S. Treasury bonds will purchase a strike on your headquarters. So this bloviator threatened, you know, this guy Don King or Muhammad Ali during his day trying to threaten and brag and say he's in control while watching 15,000 strikes on his country. That's the guy we're dealing with? I don't know. Not only are they liars, because it's proven about their rockets and their nuclear program, but now they're exaggerators. I don't even know who to trust now. But the President of the United States, his comments has raised the market 1,000 points, at least temporarily. We'll see what it means for getting oil and gas in your tank? Because I think oil is down to $91 a barrel. I mean, we want it at 65. That's good for the oil company. It's good for the consumer. But mostly, you want diesel down if you want to get food prices down. Because these trucks that deliver the food, diesel. So we'll see where this goes. Also, in New York, no one has to tell you that St. John's, who hasn't got to the Sweet 16 since 1999, and during my youth from the 80s and 90s, used to be a dominant team and almost be as big as, you know, the pro teams. Because this is not really a college area. But St. John's, again, won in the very last second. And they beat Kansas. Next up, Duke on Thursday. So it's going to be great. That's the cover. And that's the distraction we get from what's happening over in Iran and with the economy. Don't move. If you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show, Brilliant Hollyhand is next. Don't move.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and with me in studio is Brilliant Hollyhand. He's political commentator, author of the upcoming book, Make America Talk Again. And we're just watching now this political fray that we're involved in. And the biggest example, the latest clashes, is TSA. I mean, to get back at ICE, you're shutting down the Coast Guard, you're shutting down cybersecurity, you're actually shutting down TSA, so people are waiting in lines 4 or 5 hours. Another example of both sides not getting along. But candidly, there's just no way anyone who looks at this can actually blame Republicans for this. ICE is fully funded to the point where they got to go substitute for TSA workers. This absolutely makes no sense. Brilliant. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell me about your book.
Yeah, it's called Make America Talk Again. We're giving you the exclusive announcement here. We're super excited. We came up to New York from class today because it's been so important.
You're at Auburn.
At Auburn, freshman. I've been to 10 campuses the past semester. I've debated with my peers. I've been threatened by my peers, but I've also heard from them. And a lot of the same young people that are classmates of mine come up and they tell me over and over again that they write two versions of every essay, one that they believe in and one that they know will get a good grade because they've been trained by their professor to kind of tuck their tail, to hide their opinions. We've been told to sit down, to shut up, to wait our turn. And we're tired of that. Like, Gen Z has opinions. We want to speak out. And this whole idea that America is louder than ever before is true, but we're also more silent than ever before. We know how to keep our tongue. We know how to politely stay away from politics. Our generation was raised in this day and age that we were told that politics or faith are taboo topics. Like, we shouldn't talk about politics or faith out in public. Therefore, Brian, what happens when I want to discuss politics or faith? We resort to assassination. We resort to screaming. We resort to ranting on social media. We do not have a conversation like we're doing now. So this book is just that simple conversation, analysis from 10 campuses directly. It's not from some overpaid consultant. It's from a college student myself. You can pre-order it right now, brianlebook.com. Sign copies there.
Yeah, and you should back up a little bit. How did you come into the political fray? How did you come across? You wrote to Charlie Kirk, right?
Yeah, I was a little bit earlier than most people. I was in the fourth grade. I was 11 years old. I wanted to start a podcast, but nobody would come on the podcast. And I DM'd Charlie. He was coming to speak on a campus near me. And I was like, hey, is there any way I can get like 10 minutes of your time? And he gave me 30. And we did a sit-down conversation. He was a friend ever since then. And he's the guy that inspired me to go to campuses. It seems so scary and daunting to go debate on a campus. And I asked him about it one time, like, how do you do it? Like, how do you handle the pressure? You have no idea what they're going to ask you. You can't really prep for it. And he was like, it's the most important thing is civil discourse. Like, treat it like a conversation. Don't get up there and lecture them. We hear enough lectures from our professors. Go just have a conversation with people. So many people are so hungry for conversations. Everybody rants on social media. They scream from a podium and a class.
But you thought a lot of people just want to say their opinion and almost afraid to have it examined?
Absolutely. There are so many people that walk up to the microphone and scream, F you, F this, scream a death threat at you and then walk away. And I'm like, hey, I'm here. Like, let's have a conversation. I came to your campus to talk to you. And if you disagree with me, awesome. Let's figure out where we can find some common ground, or maybe you can share a perspective I've never heard before. People don't want to do that. That's not trendy. That doesn't go viral on social media.
So now you're looking at a story where anti-Semitism is huge. And someone told me that if you want to bring up a name that the average college student wants to talk about, bring up Hitler. And that's like a hot name that people are debating and exploring. How did that happen?
It's become this fringe online where they don't have anything valuable to say. They have criticism of our party, and that's great. Like, offer constructive feedback of how we can build. Instead, they want to support Hitler or Stalin every 5 minutes. And I think it's childish. I think if you can't have an actual policy standpoint where you can offer some constructive feedback for us to build something, just to get a click, you got to scream that you're a Hitler fan club member. I think it's childish. I think it's embarrassing that we've allowed that party to kind of take hold. But also, the warning is important. You and I have talked about this before. We can laugh this off and say this is just a few people, and it is on the far right. But that's the same thing that Pelosi and, say, Schumer did to the far left at one point. They said, oh, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Omar, they're just a few radical people of the squad having a press conference. Nelzohar Mondani is the mayor of this city. That fringe has taken over the stronghold of their party. We can't let that happen. We've got midterms this November. The Republican Party is stronger than ever. We've got the majority. But we can't allow in this moment to say, oh, let's take our foot off the gas and just allow any Republican to do anything they want. No, let's allow healthy conversation. Let's not silence them. Let's talk with them. But let's definitely not allow them to be mainstreamed and put in the platform.
Did you find anti-Semitism on Auburn's campus?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had people come up on my I did a debate on Auburn's campus, and I would say probably 70-80% of the Q&A questions for an hour to 2 hours
was
all about that. Yes, majority on that topic, which I understand. A lot of people have criticism of the idea of us sending blank checks to a foreign nation, of us bankrolling a foreign nation, of our generation being the troops on the front line of a proxy war if we were to get deployed in, say, a war like that. That's all fair criticism. When you get to a weak point of you're going to say, oh, I'm so fed up with the nation of Israel that any minor inconvenience in my life, I'm just going to blame on the Jews, that's embarrassing. That's childish. That's when we get to a point you can't actually like support a policy idea, you immediately just blame the Jews. That's embarrassing.
What about blaming Israel for everything? And now you have the President of the United States, who many people on the right supported, sure. Most did. And now are you going to pretend as if he has to take his orders from somebody else?
Let's use this weekend as an example. We've had for the past few days all of these former Trump supporters or Trump admin come out and say, oh, well, Netanyahu owns Trump. And yet Trump's telling Netanyahu to stand down on attacking Iran or certain areas. Or he's actually calling a peace treaty. Correct. Yeah, he's actually calling for something here. I don't think that would be something that's actually showing the president's red line here, which I think is a cool point. A lot of people want to attack the president and say, oh, well, he's a warmonger now. I think this is the opposite of warmongering.
Really is.
You saw with Bush an endless war with ground troops. You're not seeing that. And you saw Obama. Obama basically scribbled a red line in the sand like a child would at a playground. His red line under Trump is a deterrent. I mean, if you don't believe Trump's red line, just ask Maduro. Just ask the Ayatollah. Trump is not going to let America be trampled on anymore. And thankfully, that's actually what's happened. We don't have women in dresses running our military. We've got some pretty serious people, and we're winning.
So how do you feel like evidently his numbers are down significantly with independents? Not with you, but with independents. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a lot of people that said he said no new wars, and now there's this idea of a war. What I think's important to point out is strength like this is how you avoid wars. If we actually had strength, there would have been no Ukraine war. If we actually had strength, we wouldn't have had a botched Afghanistan withdrawal under the guy that was asleep at the wheel for the past 4 years. People forget the strength part of the peace through strength mandate. President Trump ran on a peace through strength mandate. He's not looking for a war. He's looking to make sure that America is not attacked. And this isn't just some like rumor, like, oh, the Iran might attack us. They've attempted to kill our president, and we don't know how many supercells have come across our border. They could be right here in Times Square in New York City. We have no idea. Mm-hmm. Actually addressing that threat before it becomes a problem is how we have peace through strength. People forget what that bumper sticker actually means.
Right. So, Tom, now, did you fly here?
Yes, I did. TSA was a nightmare. Out of Atlanta. It was insane yesterday. I traveled very often.
How often did you?
We got there 4 hours early, and we had a few minutes before our flight before we got there.
Few minutes.
There was a lot of people at the beginning that had one long line. Thankfully, we were in pre-check, so we got to kind of, you know, get a little bit quicker. But a lot of people, when we were leaving, I was watching Fox on the flight up here, we're starting to line up outside the Atlanta airport.
Wow.
Just to get through TSA.
And so this is happening. So the president's going to put ICE in there. What an in-your-face. They want to ban ICE. He's like, not only are they getting paid, but I'm going to go put them at the places that you're denying the TSA.
The same people that want to defund the police, defund ICE, defund government workers are the same people that are now whining that we need their help. And like, who can assist us? Well, the same people you wanted to defund a few weeks ago are the ones coming to save you. But I think this speaks to a larger narrative. Gen Z, like, frankly, is tired of this fake outrage. Like, we're tired of the Democrats trying to cry wolf. They don't have good candidates. They don't have good policies. They have to run off of tragedies and fear. They have to try to shut down the TSA lines. They have to try to make chaos across the country, whether it be riots or protests or burning flags, to try to get us into a sympathy vote for them in November. They can't run a good candidate in November. They've got to go try to cause chaos in the airport to say, oh, look, Republicans are evil. We see through that crap.
Rowan Holland is here. Holly Hand is here, political commentator, author of the upcoming book, Make America Talk Again. So let's talk about, too, what's happening with these negotiations to bring this thing to a halt. What ICE is saying is we need the masks. We can't go to a judge to get a warrant. But about roving patrols, no problem. We will end it. Identification, we'll understand it. We'll get rid of that. We'll also use body cameras. That's okay. Goodbye, Bovino. Goodbye, Kristi Noem. That, to me, is a Democratic win. They could say, Absolutely. Look at what I got.
Absolutely. I mean, what a crazy novel concept. You have a government that listens to the people, that didn't stick the head in the sand. Trump actually is a man of the people. Listen to the complaints and
Trump
put the body
evidently
cams.
Reported earlier it's been that he said this did not look good.
Sure.
The Minneapolis, some of the other things that took place, Chicago. He didn't like that whole thing was done and it's been perceived. Told his guys to pull back a little. How do you feel about that?
Young people voted for mass deportations. I was at the same campaign rallies that you covered where we held up signs that said mass deportations today. This isn't like some shock that Trump was coming off office and suddenly decided it's going to be pro-mass deportations. We've got a crazy novel concept that a president actually does what he says he's going to do. But messaging and optics is the entire name of the game here. We've got a midterm election and just a few months away. We have to make sure that people understand that we're taking out the violent criminals. We're not causing chaos in the cities. A lot of these paid protesters were there just to cause the chaos. So let's make sure that it's clear that we're there to do a job, do an operation, and then get out. We're not staying in these cities. We're not trying to uproot anything.
Right. So when you get to the point where you're doing this book tour, you're going to focus on the campuses?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, so I can't think of anything more important. And not just college students. High school seniors can vote as well. A lot of people overlook them. Candidates don't go speak to them. Candidates don't make a point. I've just been to high schools the past few months because I think it's so important.
Are you working with Turning Point?
We're going to some Turning Point chapters
right.
across the country.
And is that something you want to do?
Sure. I would love to. I mean, I can't think of anything more important than the people I get to sit with class with every day, getting to share this with them. We made it a paperback book because it's cheaper for young people to be able to buy. Like that means I make less money, but it means more people can buy it. So like young people, that entire perspective of getting this to them, not like it's like a viral social media video, an actual handbook. Here's a guide from somebody that's been at the campuses that has been threatened, trying to tell you how we can prevent stuff like this.
Right. So when you go to, do you think they lost momentum since Charlie's death?
I don't think so. Not at all.
Are they present at Auburn?
Yeah, absolutely. We have one of the largest chapters in the country, actually, in Auburn.
And you're a member there?
Of course. Yeah.
How do you feel about high school? And you're a little bit of an anomaly. You were in activated fourth grade. But what role do you think they should play in high school?
I'll tell you, just to be honest, I've seen more energy and passion from high school students than I've seen from college students lately. College students are scared of, oh, am I going to get kicked out of this club or not get this job if I share my political opinion? High school students are just bold and unashamed with whatever they say. And that's kind of like how it should be. We shouldn't live in a culture where it's like, oh, if I share this Turning Point graphic, or oh, if I go to this club or chapter meeting, I'm not going to get a job, or I'm not going to be welcomed into this fraternity or sorority or SGA. There's not that fear in high school, and they're doing large events in these cafeterias and gymnasiums that shocked me. I've never seen anything like it before.
Right. So you're seeing that in high schools. And why do you think so many are still resisting it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people said, oh, well, we're tired of this mindset of chaos, and we want to have something that comes back to Christian moral values. It's not like they're immediately running to, say, the Republican Party. They're running to a party that's just patriotic. Like, it just starts with that. Right. Like, if they're told in history class to hate the country that gave them the freedom to talk about it, and then there's a club, like a Club America, that allows them to just be patriotic, they're going to run to that.
So I want you to hear, when I mentioned before about independence, it was on CNN, but still, Howard Enten working the numbers, cut 28.
Among independents, who, of course, ultimately usually decide the elections here in the United States of America, the numbers are even more troublesome for the White House. Take a look here. Okay, independent, indies, Trump will or is making you fiscally worse off, better off. Just before the election, the slight plurality, though within the margin of error, said better off, 40% to 38% worse off. Come over to this side of the screen. Look at this. 3 in 5 Americans who are independents say that Trump is making them worse off financially. 60%. Now just 13% of independents say Trump is making them better off financially. That's a 47-point margin in favor of worse off compared to a 2-point margin in favor of better off just before Trump was reelected. That's a nearly 50-point switcheroo.
So, I mean, we're in the middle of a war with prices going up per barrel over $100, $110. Now it's down to about $90. But you know, normally on CNN, I would take it with a grain of salt, but he lurks numbers. He'll sure. hop on and say Trump's sure. on the rise. More, I know Republicans are more popular than Democrats, but do you find, do you understand what he was saying?
Yeah, and I see it on the campuses. People are saying that. It's not just
I'm independent yes. and I'm out of the...
Absolutely. Here's my caution. I chaired Trump's youth operation in 24. The reason that Donald Trump is sitting in the Oval Office this morning is because he won disenfranchised Democrats, independent, and young people. But he didn't do it the same way that the Democrats go into a race. They walk in and say, oh, we're entitled to young people's vote. We're entitled to independents' vote. We're entitled to Dems' vote. He earned it. We have to earn it again. And we can't stick our head in the sand. We can't do what the, you know, the Dems did when Biden was in office and say, oh, inflation, what is that? What does that mean? There is no such thing as inflation. Address it head on and say, we realize that you're paying more at the pump. Mm-hmm. Here's our step plan to address it.
So Make America Talk Again. It's yes, out sir. When?
It's pre-ordered today at brylandbook.com for a signed copy. It's out in July. So we'll come back with you and talk more.
Oh, it's out in July.
Yes,
okay.
sir.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Brylin, thanks so much. Great to see you.
Thank you.
And best luck at Auburn.
Thank
I know
you.
You're still trying to be a freshman while doing a national tour.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show. We've got a busy... There's so much going on. The President of the United States spoke a few hours ago, talked about there's now talks going on with Iran in the U.S. The strikes are continuing, I hope. And here's why I say I hope. Because if this ends right now, and the Iranians have shown that they can survive and shut down the Strait of Hormuz at any moment... Even though we know they didn't win, they're going to walk away like they won. And I'm worried about the next president. Now, did they do enough to destroy Iran for the immediate? Right now, if it ends, they did. They got to reopen up the strait, and they'll do that. But I'm worried this president is trying to fix it for the next one. And it's going to be so hard to get the momentum to go back in again, and we'll have the risk that the president took to do it. He's just got to finish the job without destroying the economy. And the one way to do that is to get the strait open. And there could be our military geniuses have thought a lot about this. We now have the USS Tripoli is in theater. So I think that's going to be important. Scott Bessent knows that this president is extremely resourceful. Cut one.
As President Trump always does, he's leaving all options on the table. We had a very successful bombing campaign against the military installations at Karg Island, the nexus for all the Iranian oil supply. You know, what could happen with Karg Island? We'll see. And again, just to be clear, the command and control system of the Iranian regime is in chaos. This is Hitler's bunker. Hitler's dead. Himmler is dead. Goring is dead. Most of what you're seeing are lone wolf activities. The mid-range ICBM that was shot off, these two missiles yesterday, that's out of desperation, Kristen.
It is, and it shows backing up our case, I mean America's case. We're allowing them to get intermediate. Do you want intercontinental? Don't tell me they can't do it. They said by 2035 before the war, we didn't think they had the intermediate. Now they end the intermediate. You're going to tell me they're going to get intercontinental. So if they said, they go, yep, we got that nuke program, and now we have intercontinental missiles. So now we got to get the Golden Dome working perfectly in order to take on this Middle Eastern power. And if you leave it less than crippled, what message are you leaving with the Gulf states who stood by us and took some pounding because of this? So some of the things they're saying, the foreign minister came out yesterday and said, remember, on February 28th, this is what he said before the war. We intentionally kept the range of our missiles below 2,000 kilometers so we don't have that capability. Lie. We don't have enriched uranium. We have four. I could play the soundbite. We don't have time. I have 460 kilograms. The president of the United States says, I'm talking to, and what Trey Yinks now says is the parliament. The person we're talking to is the head of the parliament. The head of the parliament just said they're going to go after any bondholders of the U.S. over the weekend. These guys are liars, they're bloviators, they're braggarts, but they're losing their capacity to make missiles. They are losing their capacity to make drones. They are losing the ability to light the Capitol. There are now power outages in Tehran. Somehow we have to empower the people to take back their country. A nation of 90 million, run by people that for the most part, maybe 1 million, 1% agree with their government. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.